Welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, broadcasting from Fool Global Headquarters here in Alexandria, Virginia. Hope you're enjoying the end of your summer. We're here each week to talk about the motley world of money and investing. On this week's show, we're going to talk to the very motley Ben Stein. Ben's got a few thoughts on planning for retirement, yours, not his, and we'll also enlist him in our game of Follywood Squares this week. But we begin the show by talking to the author of a business book with a lizard on the cover, and at The Motley Fool, we're suckers for books like that. The book is Mean Markets and Lizard Brains, How to Profit from the Science of Irrationality. The author is Terry Burnham, the president and founder of Holocene Consulting, and a guy who studies the application of biology to economics and finance. Terry was an economics professor at the Harvard Business School. He also worked on Wall Street for Goldman Sachs and was the president and CFO of the biotech firm Progenix Pharmaceuticals. He joins us from WGBH Studios in Boston. Terry Burnham, welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Thank you, sir. Tell us about the title first, Terry. Mean Markets and Lizard Brains. What is a lizard brain and what is a mean market?
Well, recent research conducted at Harvard and other places has shown that inside the brain of a person and inside the brain of an investor, there are two warring camps going on. And one part is the rational side, and that's the part we engage when we think about price-to-earnings ratios of stocks and so forth. But the part of our brain that loves a stock that's going up and hates a stock that's going down, that's the irrational part, the back of the brain, and I call that the lizard brain.
Okay, now let's talk mean market.
Well, the most important thing to know is, first of all, you have two brains that are involved here. They really are in conflict with each other. And the second thing to know is that the back of your brain, again, this aspect I call the lizard brain, is not your friend in financial markets. So if you allow your instincts, your emotion, your gut response to guide your investing, the result will be that you will not do very well in financial markets. Hence, they will appear to be mean.
And Terry, you write that the lizard brain has helped us reproduce, find food, and flourish, but it tends not to work so well when dealing with financial markets. It puts me in mind of Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, who on this show in the past has shared the rowboat syndrome, where we're all looking backwards as we paddle down the river of life and investing. Too often we're buying high because the market's already done well and we're looking backwards, and then we're selling low, disconsolate after our stock has gone down. We're selling at the wrong point as well. Do you agree?
That's absolutely correct. And it's more than folk wisdom now. Again, in the last 5 to 10 years, we've been able to look inside the brains of people in these MRI machines and see what's going on when we make decisions. And the answer is exactly as you just described and as Jack Bogle has described. The brain is built, and again, by this part of the brain, I mean the back of the brain, has a pattern recognition aspect to it. And the simplest explanation is that it's built to think that the past will repeat itself. And so exactly as you said, after a stock has gone up a lot, the back of our brain screams at us, buy it, it's going higher, the trend is going to continue. And as we know, a chasing performance is not a way to have good outcomes. And so if we listen to the back of the brain, we're likely to chase performance and, in fact, do poorly.
So perhaps the solution is an obvious one, but whether it's obvious or not, Terry, can you give me a sense? What is the answer? We're all built to be bad investors, so what's the solution?
Well, the solution is you want to align yourself with the front of your brain. So we share the back of our brain with lots of other animals, but we also have a big rational part that lives in the area known as the prefrontal cortex. It's above our eyes and can extend all the way back to the ears. It's a small part of the brain, but it is unique among humans to be so large. And all of the advice that I give in my book is to align yourself, to give control to the front of the brain. And that means in simplistic terms, in practical terms rather, to shackle the lizard brain, which is to set up your financial situation so that every single one of your financial decisions is made by rational you and not a single one is made by emotional you. And this requires a personal review of your financial structure to ensure that you don't make emotional decisions. The kind of decisions that different people make that are emotional vary. So some people might be tempted to call up at 2 in the afternoon when the market's on and make a trade. Other people don't have that temptation, but you have to analyze your own behavior, find out where your own weaknesses are, and constrain the irrational and emotional part of your investing desires.
Terry, you say that conventional investment advice is based on the underlying belief that people and financial markets are rational. We're talking about investment advice there. What's wrong with the idea that people and markets are rational?
Well, the idea that people are rational is something that's held by most economists and many financiers. Mm-hmm. And what's wrong with it is that over the last 20 years or so, we've discovered that it's not true. And, you know, when you talk to people outside of economics faculties, they all kind of know that people are crazy. What's new in the last 10 years or so is that we now have systematic evidence that people make all sorts of logical mistakes. And, you know, it's very difficult to do the sorts of calculations that one would need in order to correctly evaluate stocks and bonds and houses. So we just don't come to the table with that kind of machinery.
We talked earlier about the rowboat syndrome in passing. You write about some of the other irrational behaviors that plague our investing. I want to spot you up with a few of those and have you elaborate. I've got three for you. The first one, irrationality number one, pride goeth before a financial loss.
Well, humans seem to be built to get very stubborn. And by that, what I mean is we don't get out of losing situations as quickly as we ought to. And again, this varies from things like road rage or so forth. But in the investment world, what it means is that we tend to hang on to our losers. We get emotionally stuck in our positions. And this has been documented in the behavioral economics world to show that people actually will walk away from money in situations where the alternative is to sort of admit that they're on the short end of the stick here. And the problem with that in financial markets is that you know, we can get emotionally stuck in losing positions when we ought to just get out of them and move on.
Irrationality number two, fear of losses causes losses.
This is an interesting quirk in human nature. If you ask someone to take a risky gamble of the following form, we're going to flip a coin, you're going to bet on it. If you're wrong, you lose $5. How much do I have to promise you in the winning side in order for you to take the bet? So in order to risk losing $5, how much do you have to make to take the bet? And the answer for most people, the average person, is about $20. So we need four times as much in winnings to compensate the loss. Mm. And that may seem, well, that's great. Well, if I had that attitude, I'd never lose any money. I'd never take any bets that were bad bets. The problem is that when we buy stocks, often we become we get in the losing domain. Our stocks have gone down a little bit. At that point, when we might be trying to evaluate them rationally, this fear of losses causes us to do crazy things. So, for example, both long-term capital management and Nick Leeson and the Baring Brothers collapse added to losing positions. They were behind. They wanted to become winners. And they said, there's no way I'm going to take a loss. I'll do whatever it takes to avoid a loss. And they ended up, in both cases, destroying their firms. This happens in our own portfolios on a smaller basis if we get stubborn and aren't willing to recognize losses.
Irrationality number three, Terry, finding patterns in random walks. Explain.
Well, is there ever a day at the end of the market, if you turn on CNBC or Bloomberg or anybody, where the commentator says, I have no idea why the market did what it did? The answer is never. There's always a story after the fact about why the market moved. And inside our brain, again, is machinery which finds patterns. So everybody from pigeons up to humans, when they're presented with what are really are random walks, you know, so whether Wall Street itself is a random walk is a different question. But even when humans and other animals are presented with things that are truly random, we find patterns in those. So, for example, if you have a coin flipped in front of you and by chance it comes up heads three times in a row, part of your brain will literally show surprise if a tail comes up. So our brain is built to look backwards. It's built to find patterns even when there are no patterns. And again, in the financial market, that is a disaster if you act upon that.
We're talking to Terry Burnham, the author of Mean Markets and Lizard Brains, How to Profit from the New Science of Irrationality. In your book, you refer to the work of Wharton professor Jeremy Siegel, the author of Stocks for the Long Run, a stock market historian, a proponent of investing in stocks, and we should add, a frequent guest on our show. You take exception with some of Jeremy Siegel's conclusions. You say that to determine if stocks are a good investment now and in the future, we need to go beyond looking at the past return of stocks. We need to look at other markets besides our own.
That's correct. So I think that most people should own fewer stocks. And in fact, I believe that they it's as difficult to take that advice as it is to break an addiction of cigarettes or heroin and so forth. So in a sense, I think we are addicted to stocks. And in the book, I attribute some of that to Professor Siegel. And I think he's done the best work on the historical performance of the U.S. stock market, and his work is absolutely first rate. And I think that the omission that I cite in the book is that he doesn't take into account appropriately what's called survivorship bias, that both stocks in the U.S. and stocks overall in certain markets have done better than could have been expected in advance. And so when we look backwards and we say, oh, stocks have been a great investment in the United States for 200 years, that is absolutely true. What isn't necessarily true is that they're going to be a good investment for the next 10 years or 200 years.
Let's talk about survivorship bias. I had always understood that to mean that when looking at studies of how mutual funds have performed, in many cases, we're only looking at funds that are still around today. If you're looking at a 20-year study of funds, often those studies neglect to mention the funds that didn't do so well or just collapsed and folded, and so they're not on our radar today. Is that a proper understanding of survivorship bias, and how does that affect what you just said?
That is a proper understanding of survivorship bias. The idea can go beyond mutual funds. So the way you described it is absolutely correct. If you start 100 mutual funds and then 2 years later there are only 50 left, and presumably the 50 that are left are the better ones, it's not fair to analyze just the 50 that are left. If we were to look across countries, the argument against simply looking at the U.S. experience, which is what Professor Siegel focuses on, is that the U.S. has had the best outcome of all. So, you know, I make the analogy in my book to, would it be appropriate for us to base our basketball chances on Michael Jordan's career? Would it be appropriate to make our golf decisions based on Tiger Woods' career? And the answer is no. So the United States is the Michael Jordan of all asset markets across the world. And, you know, it's not impossible that the U.S. will outperform the rest of the world by as much as it did for the last 200 years, but it's also not obvious that it will do that as well. And so if you were to say, oh, we didn't know 200 years ago the U.S. was going to be the best place to invest, then you should take some form of weighted average across all the stock markets that existed 200 years ago and say, ah, that's what stocks do in the world, not just the U.S. experience.
Mm. Terry Burnham is the author of Mean Markets and Lizard Brains. If someone calls you a lizard brain the next few days, you know who to blame. Terry Burnham, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
It was a pleasure. Take care.